Hello and welcome to Mundo Albiceleste podcast, the last edition before the World Cup, and we are all very excited, and I'm very sick, as you can hear from my voice. And also, John in Malaysia couldn't be with us due to some internet connection problems, and so I have to stick with Roy. I have no other chance, so I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be in this position, but Roy is a last class. Yeah. How are you, Roy?
I'm good. You don't seem very thrilled to be talking to me, Kevin.
Well, you could change that situation. I mean, you could convince me that you're good company, you know?
Okay. Likewise. You can convince me as well, especially considering you're the sick one.
at least we are in very different locations, so you can get anything from me.
It's not contagious over the recording.
Exactly. So this is being recorded on a Wednesday morning, and there's only 3 days before Argentina takes on Nigeria, and I can feel the famous butterflies in my stomach, and we've been discussing this in the last few days between the two of us, and I asked you exactly this question on an email, and I said I was okay until I saw an ad on TV. I was watching the NBA finals, and I got the advertisement for ESPN in the USA, and they were saying it's Lionel Messi versus Nigeria, and they show a few images of both teams, and then they said this Saturday live on ESPN or whatever, and that was the moment in which I said, okay, now this is really happening. I mean, the World Cup is really upon us, and so far I was so caught up in the middle of this build-up and the injury talking and the hooligans and how the team is preparing in Pretoria, but I didn't realize the World Cup was so close. It's just around the corner, and now I can really feel the tension that I've been feeling since I watched my first World Cup in 1986. And do you feel the same? Have you been feeling it for longer? What was the moment in which you realized that the World Cup is just around the corner?
I started getting the feeling maybe around 2 weeks ago. I was flipping through the channels, and you know, there was a commercial. There's a channel here called CBC in Canada, and that's the channel, that's the company that's going to air the matches. And I was just flipping through, and they showed a commercial, and you know, the World Cup South Africa is coming. And that was around 2 weeks ago, and I was like, wow. And then last weekend, I saw the commercial again, and I was like, wow, this is for real. And then I think it was Sunday night, I'm flipping, and there's this show, they air it, it's called The Road to South Africa. And they basically, what it is, that they pick a team, and you know, they preview what happened in the qualification and this and that. And it was Argentina, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, wow, we're less than a week away. And that, I think that's when it really hit me that, you know, this is for real and it's really soon.
Yeah, the problem is that it could be a problem. It's also a good thing as well to be on top of everything and to be informed. But the problem could be that if you watch the sports channels here in Buenos Aires, they're broadcasting from South Africa for maybe a week and a half ago. And all they do is keep repeating and tell you the same things you've been hearing all over, and they keep discussing what would be the ideal lineup for Argentina, the same news refreshed all over again, and they're virtually broadcasting 24 hours from South Africa. I mean, there are two channels that are connected all the time with South Africa, and that's something that really could work both ways. Could be a good thing to calm your anxiety, or could even elevate it. Could elevate it even more. So it will probably be old news when you listen to this. But the latest we are hearing at the time of recording this is that Carlos Tevez will be in the starting lineup to face Nigeria. and he will replace Nicolas Otamendi if we take into consideration the team that faced Germany in Munich in March. So that means we'll play with three at the back, De Michelis, Samuel and Heinze, and those three will be playing at the back all the time, and then they will be joined by Jonas as a kind of a
right wing back type of thing.
Yeah,
he's exactly. Going to be switching between midfield and right back.
Exactly. Yeah, he'll be the one making this team more flexible, because he will join our midfield when we are in attack and when we have the ball, and then he will join our defense when we are being attacked. So then we'll have Mascherano, Veron and Di Maria as our midfielders, and then we'll have Lionel Messi, Carlos Tevez and Gonzalo Higuain. So far, I mean, this could change, of course, but this is the latest we are getting from those channels that are all the time
now ordered. For me, it'll be interesting to see if Messi is given the free role, because really, if you watch on Barcelona, it's a 4-3-3, but Messi's kind of, you know, he's really playing behind the two strikers, and it'll be interesting to see if he does that, if he plays behind Tevez and Higuain, or if it's actually going to be just three strikers, Tevez on the left, Higuain middle, and Messi on the right.
I don't think I don't think playing the three of them definitely up front will be a good thing. I mean, I see I think we could have more chances if Tevez drops back a little bit more, and maybe the interchange with Messi, and they both could drop back a little bit more and then go further up when required. I mean, they could very much do the job. I mean, they could switch between being really up front and getting a few meters back to interact with Veron in the creation
Exactly, because that's going to be really important, because at the moment there's no real, you know, link between Veron or the midfield and the attack, and if we put Tevez or Messi there, you know, at the bottom end as the one behind the two strikers, then that could really help linking up the midfield and the attack.
Yeah, and don't forget Di Maria, because with Messi attracting most of the attention from Nigeria's defenders and midfielders, Di Maria will benefit from it, and he could work on some free space that he will have when Nigeria concentrates on marking Messi and even Tevez for that matter. So I think Tevez could bring the X factor in this formation, because he could be used as a midfielder when needed as well, and he could create some stuff from scratch. I mean, Di Maria as well and Messi too. The three of them have the capacity to beat any defender on one-on-one situations, and it would be interesting to see how we see Di Maria playing, because we now have a rather big center forward in Higuain, or someone who could play in the air, because we were lacking this during the qualifiers, because we were not using them. We were not using Higuain or Milito or even Palermo. We didn't use him that much, and so we were seeing how our forward players or someone from midfield coming up the flanks and then sending across for no one, and that was a real problem. They were sending across for Messi to head, or for Agüero to head, or even for Tevez, and that's not a winning formula. I mean, those two or three guys need to get the ball to their feet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and you know how you just mentioned, for you Tevez is the X factor. He probably is, but for me Di Maria is the guy, because out of all our forwards, Higuain, Messi, Tevez, everyone's going to be looking at Messi, you know, oh, he's a star, he's the World Player of the Year, he's this, he's that, and that's cool, but for me, Di Maria is the guy to look out for, if you're our opposition. I mean, yes, any three of our strikers could kill you, but Di Maria, he's young, and he's I don't know, he's so full of, what's that word, like, explosiveness, you know, he could take you on, he could run with the ball faster than you, he could cross, he had a decent shot, he could pass, he's really, for me, he's the guy that could win us games, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if he was our only attacking option, I wouldn't be in total agreement with you, but given that the other team, in this case it's Nigeria, but it will happen the same for the same will happen to South Korea and Greece. If he was the only attacking option, then they probably come up with a plan to neutralize him, yeah. like Mourinho neutralized Messi in the Champions League, and many other examples, like Italy did with Maradona in '82. So this is very interesting because there are so many attacking options that you have to take precautions with a few of them, but you cannot take precautions with the four of them at all times. So that's something that really encourages me when it comes to this game against Nigeria, because we have so many attacking options, and Di Maria is probably playing as a midfielder, but in reality, he's another weapon up front that we have. So yeah he could benefit from Lionel Messi being playing opposite to him, and Nigeria shifting their power towards the flank where Messi plays, and then freeing up some space for Di Maria.
Yeah. And to be honest, if you read what's going on in the papers or what the Nigerian players are saying, every single one of them keeps saying, yeah, well, we're going to stop Messi. We're going to stop Messi. You know, we're going to stop him from doing his thing, and we're going to defend him. No one's talking about Di Maria. You know what I mean? And people are going to be so focused on Messi that when Di Maria gets the ball, they're going to be like, oh, crap, you know, he's unmarked. Oh, you know, we're done for him. If he sends in a cross or a good pass, that could lead to a goal.
Yeah, and don't forget he can shoot from outside the box, and that's another weapon, especially with this ball that many players have been criticizing. Of course, the players that have been criticizing the ball are all signed up by Nike or
no.
Umbro or Reebok. Yeah.
No, there was one I remember.
The only one who defended the ball was Kaká, and he is of course signed up by Adidas. That's no coincidence. I mean, open your eyes for a moment.
No, but you'd have to be blind not to see that there is some sort of effect. I was watching, it was France versus Japan, I think it was last week, and Japan won 1-0, and their goal, it was off a free kick, and the ball dipped and swerved, and, you know, this is not Roberto Carlos taking a free kick here, or Gabriel Batistuta. It was full of power and speed, and it was coming right towards Hugo Lloris, the French goalkeeper, and he was about to catch it, and then it just dips right in front of him. There's certainly an effect on the ball.
Yeah, but I remember in the build-up for every World Cup since I can remember, they were critics against or about the new ball. That was going to be launched for the World Cup. I mean, I remember with the Fever Nova, it was a controversy, and also with the team guys and all the footballs, all the balls that were used in the latest World Cups have been under fire. And I mean, it's the same ball for everyone. So
no, it is the same ball, but I mean, if you look at, from what I remember, 2002, it was more if I'm not mistaken, it was the strikers were complaining that the ball is too light and they can't control where it's going. And, you know, none of the goalkeepers said anything. 2006 was the same thing, but not as much. I found 2006, people accepted it for what it was, but this one just seems way too weird. And especially considering that we're going to be playing at altitude some of the matches, that has to play a huge effect.
Yeah, but do this exercise and check the statements from the players and check who are their sponsors, okay? And then you'll see a lot of truth behind them.
Maybe you're right, but I mean, still, I think it was, what's it called? I think it was David James. Isn't he signed by Umbro?
Umbro? Yeah, probably. Yeah, or yeah. Probably by McDonald's or.
Maybe. And I heard him saying, he said, oh yeah, you know, the ball has its problems, but it's the same ball that everyone's going to be using.
Yeah.
So he was complaining about it, but he was defending it at the same time.
Yeah. He probably didn't want to make any excuse. But, you know, you know he's famous for letting some silly goals in, so maybe. Maybe he's trying to cover in advance.
Okay, but not to get completely off topic, this is an Argentina podcast, and we don't want to completely focus on the ball and David James and anything that has to do with England at the moment. But there was something that caught my eye during the Argentina-Canada game, and that was how Maxi and Gutierrez really linked up properly. And, I mean, I know people have always said, and myself included, how Messi seems really isolated on the right-hand side, and, you know, how with Barcelona there's Dani Alves, and there's other players constantly supporting him. And I think that if building on what we saw in Canada, if we could use Maxi and Gutierrez like that, that could really help Messi. Because now he'll finally have someone to link up with, and, you know, the thing that Gutierrez and Maxi are both attack-minded players, that could really help us out with Messi and try to utilize and get the best out of him. Whereas against Germany, you had Otamendi, who doesn't really offer anything going forward, and at the moment isn't in the best form. So I think if we do use that, that could help us and benefit, and that would open up some space for other players as well.
Yeah, and now that you mention it, I think this was some point I wanted to make earlier, and I forgot, so thank you. Now that you mention this, I see Diego ready to use a different team in the group stage, and then use another one for the knockout stages, and this is why. I mean, he's probably going to go on the attack against Nigeria and then South Korea, and then depending on the results, of course, he could change. But I see our team ready to welcome Maxi at any time when it's a knockout stage game, and probably use Otamendi or Jonas as right back, and then Maxi instead of probably Tevez, because games will be tougher and there will be more at stake, and maybe Diego sees a more balanced team having Maxi. And Maxi is also a midfielder that could be a surprise going forward. And his goal scoring rate for Argentina is amazing. His average is better than Tevez and better than many, many other forwards that we have. And he knows what it is to score in a World Cup. He scored 3 already, and he's a of all the 23 players we have, he's the one who scored the most at a World Cup. And not to mention, one of those was in a knockout stage game against Mexico that we all remember very well. Yeah. So I see a chance for Maxi to become a starter later on in the tournament. And it could be a good thing for him because he'll be fresher than other players. So we'll have to wait and see when it comes to that. And I also see that I think I like our team's chances more when it comes to games in which we are being attacked a little bit and we can counterattack our opposition than when we have to fight for the game and try and find our spaces and the other team is building a wall in front of their goal. I mean, I see this team be more prepared to fight it out than to play it out, you know.
Yeah, but and that'll likely be the case against Greece. Obviously, depending if we've already qualified by then, but against Greece, you know, they'll probably have a 10-man wall set up, and we're gonna have to try and crack that. But I kind of get the feeling, and I agree with you. Because if other teams attack us, and like you said, we could find the space, we could play those balls, we could get them on the counter. Whereas if we're the ones doing the attacking, most of our, and we don't do anything with it, we don't score, our players might get frustrated, and, you know, we might, you know, some of our players might start losing their heads and get used to yellow cards, or start not playing well, and the other team gets us on the counter and wins and scores. So I definitely agree with you in the sense that we probably do play better when the other team is attacking us.
Yeah, and I think Diego will not hesitate to play defensively if he sees he has to do it. I mean, Dunga is not hesitating and he's winning everything, yeah. even when he's not very liked in his own country. And we'll talk later or maybe during the tournament with our friend Rafael from Brazil, and he will give us the insight for this thing that we are discussing now. He knows much more than we do, but the feeling I get from being far from Brazil, but reading what they say in the press and hearing what some friends are telling me, they don't like him. They don't like the way Dunga is making Brazil play. But on the other hand, he is getting the results. So yeah, I guess it's the old discussion of beautiful football versus effective football. I know there are two different philosophies and they'll never be hand in hand. So it's better not to enter in that dangerous field, in that philosophical discussion or argument.
Yeah.
And there's another thing that went on. We won. I don't know if I feel like discussing this whole issue with the hooligans. Maybe for some other time. I wrote a few things on Mundo, and I don't want to give them a big space in our discussion. So another thing that was discussed in the build-up for this World Cup was seeing so many injuries to so many key players, there are two different ways of seeing it. And there's people that said you cannot get to the World Cup without playing friendlies because your team will be rusty and your team will not be ready and will not have their football fitness up to a high enough level. And there are others who are saying, no, there's no way you should play friendlies being so close to the World Cup because some serious injury could happen to some key players. So it's best for your players to be relaxed, to be training between them, and to practice some movements, and that's it. And where do you stand in this discussion?
I completely agree with Diego on this one. Far too many injuries have happened to players on other teams that it's just, you know, it's a good thing that Diego didn't play any more friendlies. The match against Canada was good. It was a friendly. It was for the bicentennial birthday for Argentina. And that's cool, you know, players got a run out. It was good. It was a solid victory. But there was no need to go out and play more friendlies. The risk of getting injured are much higher, obviously, if you play friendly than if it's just training. I know players can get injured while training, but if you look at Zidane in 2002. Going into the World Cup, he was good, everything, and then boom, in a friendly right before the World Cup, he gets injured and he's ruled out of the tournament. And it's useless. I mean, if you're going to use a friendly, use it to play other players, and by other players, I mean squad members. But that's not Diego's style, you know? Diego has always said, every friendly we have to go out and we have to win. There's no such thing as friendly matches, you know? It's just international matches. And I agree with him on that. And Diego also complained that he only had, I think, 20 days with his players in South Africa, and he wished there was more. So you can tell he's really utilizing these 20 days and trying to get the best out of his players training-wise. So, no, I agree with Diego on this. There's no need for extra friendlies.
Well, I would agree with that, but partially, because here's the thing. Diego didn't even want to play the Canada game, so he's, he's being coherent with what he says and with what he thinks. But then you have to think, he was planning to play a friendly game in Dubai, and he wanted to go there because of the money. Because there was a football clinic that he was supposed to host, and when it got cancelled, he got furious with Grandona and with the AFA. So do you want to play friendlies or do you not want to play friendlies? I mean, it's not very clear where the line is drawn there, because you don't want to play against Canada because you didn't organize that game and it was somehow imposed by the AFA together with the government as part of the Bicentenario celebrations. And to be honest, footballing wise, it was probably a useless game. I mean, and players could have been injured anyway. So it was a good thing he rested Messi, because he had a minor knock. And what if Messi was injured against Canada? I mean, I don't even want to think about that. But I don't think this is a very thought about decision. I mean, you don't want to play friendlies now, but you did want to play them in Dubai because there was some money and some business in the background. And so that's where I think it's kind of blurry. And then, talking about the injuries, I'm thinking of this. You could say Drogba got injured in a friendly match, and also who was the other Arjen Robben for the Netherlands, and what a silly injury that was. But then, which players are the other notable absentees in the World Cup? You could say Michael Ballack, but he wasn't a friendly. He was playing for the club, and he was the FA Cup final. So
that's
out of the question. It's not a friendly. And then Nani, injured in training. He tried a bicycle kick. He dislocated the shoulder. What an idiot. And then the other player who got injured is Rio Ferdinand.
Yeah.
He collided in training with Emil Heskey. So it's 50-50. I mean, and maybe Andres Iniesta, who got injured, but really slightly on Tuesday night playing for Spain against Poland, but it appears he'll be okay. Andrea Pirlo injured in training for Italy. So that's three injured players in training, and only two I could add a fourth one, Humberto Suazo for Chile, injured in training. I mean, there's four in training and two in friendly matches. So I don't think it's as easy as to 1 + 1 = 2 when it comes to judging whether it's riskier to play friendlies or just be training. I mean, Diego Milito had a minor ankle sprain, and it happened in training. So there are no guarantees in football, and I would have loved to see Argentina play more friendlies and to try and fine-tune a little more, because there's no guarantees. I mean, I feel like we will be playing against Nigeria 18 days after we played our last match together, and it wasn't even a proper challenging game. So the last proper friendly we played in which we could test some things and we could see how the team is doing was in Germany, and that happened in March. It's almost 3 months or maybe more.
Okay, no, you have a point there, but let me ask you a question. Let's say Diego sets up a friendly after the Canada game and, you know, God forbid one of our players gets injured, then what?
It would have been the same if one of them got injured in training.
No,
I mean,
no.
It's football, it happens.
But everyone would be all over Diego's back. Oh, he should not have set up a friendly. It was useless. It was this, it was that. You know, I mean, yes, players do get injured during training, obviously. But the risk is much higher when you play when you play friendly matches and train than when you just train.
I don't know about that. I mean, I just did a quick exercise, and I gave you four players that got injured in training and two that got injured in friendly matches. And I could add Diego Forlan, who got a knock in training, and the guy Walter Gargano, who knocked him out, or not knocked him out, but he hit him, and Forlan stayed in the ground for a long time. And so this guy said, for a moment I thought they were already sending me back to Uruguay as a punishment. And that would have been typical Uruguay, right? Self-destruct.
Yeah. Exactly, as you always say, self-destruct. but is there such a thing as overdoing it? Because if you look at Mexico, they played Italy, they played Chile, and they played another friendly match.
And you're saying Italy?
No, Mexico. Sorry.
Mexico. Yeah, they play Chile. They play
Chile, Italy,
England.
Oh, that's
at Wembley. Yeah. And I think they also played Holland. They played some high quality friendlies. I mean, they were probably that's the best example you're given. And there's another extreme example, and we could bring it up to the table. It's Chile. They're playing right now. It's Wednesday. They play New Zealand, and they also played twice in a day. They play against Gambia and then. I don't remember the two rivals, but they played twice in a game, and two other players played in those two matches. I mean, most of the players were.
Yeah, but that's different. Okay. That's Bielsa. They call him a loco for a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had Bielsa before. We know what it is.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, that's another discussion that could. Could have no end. I mean, what would be the end of that argument? I mean, we will have to see who wins the World Cup and how many friendlies they played, and whether that had an effect on their performances. I don't know. As always, you could play with four attacking players. You could play with one, and you could win. You could win all the same. I mean, it's. There are no formulas in football, or there are too many, and that's the beauty of it. That's why we all love it. Right. So in this segment, this is a very nice experience that we are having here, and this is something we wanted to do before the World Cup, and we were having some troubles making it happen. Because of the many time differences we have and the different schedules and some technical issues as well. But we are so glad to have BC, our friend from Nigeria, here with us to discuss everything about this game, this upcoming game between Argentina and Nigeria. Hello, BC. Thank you for being with us.
Hello, Sebastian. You're welcome.
Right. So I know it's very late in Nigeria, so we thank you for staying up so late, but it's just a couple of days before our team plays.
Anything for the World Cup, Sebastian.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, so Mundo Albiceleste listeners now can know a little bit about yourself.
Well, I work in the oil and gas industry. I'm an oil and gas consultant. But of course, I'm a football fan, very passionate one for that matter. I write a blog. It's nigeria.worldcupblog.org, nigeria.worldcupblog.org. And of course, I will enjoin people to check all my articles out and contribute and see how we're going to beat Argentina on Saturday.
Take it easy there. So you're just like us. You write a blog about your favorite team, and so we feel very happy to have you with us and to be talking to someone who really knows about his national team. So without further introduction, let's start talking about this game. I mean, the first thing I want to say is, do you remember? The previous two times in which Argentina played Nigeria, do you think it's going to be different in this case? I mean, Argentina won those two previous encounters, and Diego Maradona was playing in the first time our teams met at the World Cup. So do you think Nigeria has a chance this time?
Yes, of course. I think we've got a chance this time. You know, the first two times, there wasn't much experience. The first time in 94, we even started, we led in the game by first goal by Siasia. But, of course, the experience of Maradona then overwhelmed the boys, and they were just in awe of seeing the legend. In 2002, we had a pretty young team, and we actually even played very well, and it was 1-0. I think it was Batistuta, right? And,
yeah, it was.
For now, yes, for this weekend, we've not had best of preparations, but the team is a team that has been together for a long time. You know, people don't know that the core of the team, over 12 to 14 boys, have been together for over 5 years. So I think it's going to work well for us.
Right. So I'm thinking of other matches between Argentina and Nigeria. I remember when you boys with Nwankwo Kanu in the team defeated Argentina in the gold medal match for the Atlanta 96 Olympic Games, and then we repaid the favor last a couple of years ago when when we won in Beijing, right? So glad I was there in the stadium, and it was such a difficult game.
Wow,
to analyze.
Fantastic!
Yeah, I was working there, and I tell you, I was in the stands, and I couldn't stand the heat. I mean, it was terrible conditions, and I think it's very difficult to analyze that game because of the heat. It wasn't a normal game, but I take it there are many players from that Olympic final in Beijing still in the Nigerian team.
Yes, you're right, but I'm not too sure whether any of them is going to start. Somebody like Adele in the defense, I don't know, he plays for Sparta Rotterdam in Holland, Netherlands rather. I don't know whether he's going to start. There is Keith Taitao was there, so he's going to start now. But I think that generally when Nigeria is playing Argentina, there is a sort of rivalry now because we've played you a lot of times, about 5 times. Olympics,
yeah.
Under 20, you know, at the World Cup twice, and so we tend to have an idea of what to expect.
Okay, and we've been talking with Roy, and we've been discussing this on our blog about how many injuries are happening in the build-up for the World Cup. And I have to tell you, I felt really sorry when I heard that John Obi Mikel was going to miss this World Cup, because I want every team to be present at the World Cup at the top of their condition and with their top players. So as a football fan, and after watching him play for Nigeria and for Chelsea, but also for Nigeria in that under 20 World Cup in 2005, he was probably, if it wasn't for Messi, he would have been the best player in the tournament. So I was kind of hoping to face Nigeria at the top of their strength. How tough it's going to be for the team to not have him in this World Cup?
Oh, very tough, of course. You know, John Mikel Obi is supposed to be the face of the team. He's the highest profile person in the team. But unfortunately, you know, he didn't even play for Chelsea in the past, the last 4 weeks of the EPL. So it's been a risk. So it's not like a sudden event. People have been wondering whether I was going to make it or not. So I think that kind of prepared the team to have looked for an alternative early enough. It was not a sudden injury in the camp in South Africa. So I think the team will be able to cope. Of course, we'll have loved to have him there, but now that he's not there, we move on. You know, and we have some one or two new chaps that can actually come up well in his place.
Like, for example, Haruna or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. You already know him, right?
I saw him scoring a great goal. I saw him scoring against Colombia recently in a friendly match. He struck from outside the box. It was a great goal. And I like him. I saw a bit of that game, and I like what I saw from him. I didn't know, because at that time, we didn't know Mikel was going to be out of the World Cup. So I didn't know if he was going to be asked to do something special this time.
The boy will be fully part of the team. Now, I think he's going to start on Saturday.
Roy, feel free to ask any questions. I'm just too passionate about this. So I'm just I'm grabbing BC and I'm asking him many, many questions. So feel free to ask whatever questions you have.
No, for those listening, Seba has been, myself as well, we've really been looking forward to this interview, and it's been really difficult to set up, especially considering the time difference and technical difficulties. However, I do have a question to you, BC. How do you think Nigeria is going to fare, not only against Argentina, but against South Korea and Greece, and overall in the World Cup? What is Nigeria, what's their main goal?
In some quarters, we have been here in semifinals, but of course, I do not belong to that school of thought. But I think that the first thing is for us to just get into the second round and take it from there. I think that we should be able to cope relatively well against Greece and South Korea. Remember, we've played Greece, I think, twice, and we've beaten them. And so there'll be some kind of confidence going against Greece. Then against South Korea, they're used to teams that are quite fast and we know what to do, tactically speaking. So the kind of teams Nigeria usually have a challenge against are highly skillful sides that not too much of tactics, but individual skills and deceptive play, like Argentina, like the Brazil, So I think that we should cope fairly well. We should cope fairly well in the group.
And speaking about this upcoming game between our two teams, what can we expect from Nigeria when it comes to their defensive unit? I mean, I know you have a player like Danny Shitu. He's probably the strongest player in the World Cup. I mean, I've seen him play for QPR. I support QPR, so I saw him play at the stadium, so I know he's such a strong kind of defender and very good in the air. Do you think he's going to be starting for Nigeria on Saturday, or given the speed and the trickery of our forward, maybe the manager will opt to play with a different kind of faster but maybe smaller kind of central defender?
Well, actually, it's been a little challenge for me to actually decide that this is the person that would feature in Nigeria's defense line. I have a feeling the manager will use Shitu and Joseph Yobo. But if I were the one, I would rather use a guy called Rabiu Afolabi with Adele, because I think that they are swifter and they read the line, Rabiu Afolabi most especially. Chitu for me would have been number one, if not for the fact that he hadn't had a whole lot of football to play in the year. Of course, playing for your national team, you can be very passionate, and that can actually give you a backup whereby you can perform. So I think the issue will not really be in our defense, but our midfield. So if the midfield covers so well for the defense line, I think Shitu and Yubo will cope. I think they'll be able to play well.
Okay. And what kind of a role are we expecting to see Kanu having in this particular squad? I have to tell you, I was surprised he was called up.
He's probably going to just be a cameo role. I don't think he's going to play any major part. Maybe if the team is trailing and they think something can happen, they are desperate, maybe they can use him. Or maybe if we happen to be leading Argentina and we go like 10 minutes more, you need such a person on the pitch of play with experience and with the ability to hold on to the ball. and actually caused some free kicks and all. So he's just there as the captain and for experience and just to lead the boys on. I don't think
he's
anything
like
more than that.
Like an inspirational figure, kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I was surprised to see him on the list and see, for example, Victor and Cheve being ignored when the manager made the final cut. But at the same time, I think these kind of off-the-pitch skills that Kanu could have, or if you allow me to say skill, it could be a skill. I mean,
yes, you're right.
And so maybe that was the deciding factor for Lars Lagerbäck to call Kanu instead of Victor Anicheve. Or maybe it wasn't even a situation in which it was either Anicheve or Kanu. Maybe that was never a question for the manager. How do you see that?
I think it was never a question. It's not, a lot of people just pick players and say that, why not this player, why not that player? But I think for a manager, you have to look at the style of play and what exactly you want. And Ichibe plays like Ayegbeni, and I think that it's not Kanu that took his place. You understand? So you will probably need players that are strong and that can hustle, and also probably Obinna and Sofort and Yakubu were preferred for such a role. For Kanu, it's a different role entirely. Kanu, for me, is somebody that's skillful, slows the ball down, holds on to the ball. That's not what Anichebe would have gone for. Then at the same time, we understand that Anichebe had a slight injury. And, it was a short time to convince a new manager, really. You know, if the manager had been with the team probably over a year, maybe, just maybe, he would have been able to pick Anicheve.
Okay. And this is another question. Maybe the answer will be obvious, but I don't know, maybe you will surprise us. But is there a player in particular from Argentina that you are afraid of, or that you are more scared to face?
Okay, Gabriel Heinze, if you don't want me to say Messi.
See, you surprised me.
Let me say something. I think Di Maria is a very technical player.
Yeah.
And I think he's very slippery, and he's somebody that should be watched. I have a feeling that we'll handle Messi, and because we have seen how he could be handled and what you do for him. You double-team him. You stay on his right side and let him come inside. And all he's going to do is probably just be passing his balls. So you don't run with him. You don't just go up and play a ping-pong kind of football where some of the defenders have to stay. You know, the defense has to be stable. And you don't run with him. Like Arsenal did, you do what your Cambiaso did and Zanetti for Inter, what they did against him. You know, it's also to stay and not allow him make his runs. So, but Di Maria is very slippery. He goes to the back. He comes. He's a very technical player, and I think he'll be a very, very major challenge for Nigeria, because I know the kind of player that. That can affect a Nigerian team. He is the kind of player, somebody that sees the little things, the technical things. If you make a mistake, it buries you. You know, so I think apart from Messi, of course, he's the next person for the team.
I have three things to say about that. First, you are very right in being afraid of Heinze, because he is probably the one player that have a chance of injuring one of the Nigerian players, right? That's the first thing. Second, you are very right to be afraid of Di Maria, because he was the one who scored in Beijing, and it was a winning goal for Argentina in the Olympics against Nigeria.
Yeah.
And third of all, and this is probably something I need to just a couple of minutes to explain. You said that if you double team Messi, you may be able to control him and to keep him in check. But then, this is something we've been discussing with Roy as well. Don't you think that that's one of the main strengths Argentina has? I mean, if you double team Messi, there's probably no way that you are going to be able to double team Higuain and Tevez and Di Maria. I mean, there's probably going to be a mismatch somewhere. Maybe you answered to that question by saying that you have to keep an eye on Di Maria.
You see, double teaming a player doesn't mean that there's a numerical advantage for your opponent. It depends on how many players you defend with. You know, if you defend with 8 or 9 players, you can double team easily. So you will still be able to handle the other guys. Because I think that on the offensive, I do not see Argentina playing with more than 7 players on the offensive at any time. So I think that at every time that they're attacking Nigeria, if the Nigerian players are fit enough, they should be defending with at least 8 players. So they must have an extra man at every time for 90 minutes. If we don't, then it's going to be like the score will probably be like 3-0 or something.
Oh, don't tell me Mourinho is the manager of Nigeria now, please. I'm getting scared now.
We have to learn from Mourinho. You know, we have to learn because he's been able to pull it through. And even Alex, I'm a Manchester United fan, I need to say that. And Alex Ferguson, 2 seasons ago when we played Barcelona, that was what we did. You know, we did not play an open game. You can't play an open game with players like that, with Messi, with Higuain, with Tevez. It's not possible because you are not as skillful. It's clear that you cannot, you are not at their level in terms of skills. Very clear. You don't need to compete or try and show that you know how to play. So you just have to play to your strength. You know what you can do. That's what Inter did. That's what I believe Nigeria should do. We can catch Argentina on the fast break. Definitely we can. We have very quick-footed wingers. We have fast players, and they are very tricky as well. And I think your Heinze, if he plays, I have a feeling that it's a wing that we can play through because he played at United, and I watched him a lot of times, and I'm not a fan of his. I think that all we just need to do is to play a very slow game with you, very very slow game. You know, keep it slow and no spaces of running, you know, haywire. You know, I hope you are getting a fit.
Listen, I was so happy before talking to you, and now I'm all concerned. I mean, I'm actually seeing that this is.
I wish I was a coach.
I'm probably when you were talking, I kept thinking of the last few times we faced Brazil, and that's exactly what they did. They play defensively on us. And they play everything to their counter-attack, and they killed us. And after they scored the first goal, it was Argentina chasing the game and just Brazil just waiting for another chance to release their counter-attack. And if that's the kind of game that's going to happen on Saturday, all of a sudden, I'm not so confident anymore.
I bet you that should be the kind of game. Lagerbach is a very tactical coach. He's a very good coach. The only challenge we have is that he wasn't employed early enough. But be that as it may, I think that any reasonable tactical football follower should know that you cannot control the midfield against the Messi, I don't know whether Mascherano, Verón, and all that, except you are in Xavi, you know? We do not have such players, you just have to keep it cool and slow and make Argentina play your game. And of course, once you can get a goal, it will be a very, very tough game. And we won't be caught like 1994. We won't be caught like 1994 that You know, we had a free kick. Boys were still trying to put themselves on the wall, and Maradona just quickly passed the ball to Caniggia, or what's the guy's name again?
Caniggia,
very slippery guy. You know, so it's not that's never going to happen again. The boys are more exposed, and it's never going to happen.
So, BC, going by what you've been saying, is it safe to say, in your opinion, that whoever gets the first goal will likely get the 3 points?
You mean when Argentina gets the first goal?
If Nigeria gets the first goal.
Okay, you mean any team?
Any team, either Nigeria or Argentina, do you think?
No, it depends on when the goal comes. If it comes in the first half, the game is still open. But if it comes in the second half, I won't lie to you. Argentina will really, really need to sweat. If it was Nigeria, Argentina will really, really need to sweat to equalize. But if it's Argentina that scores, there's a possibility that you score more. Because I think that if Nigeria opens play in that game at any point in time, whether it's only 20 minutes more, 30 minutes more, I do not see the possibility of holding the Tevez and Higuain of not scoring. I think they should just play a closed game throughout and probably play for a draw and wait for any chance to score, you know, and just seal up for 90 minutes. It's possible.
Roy, whose idea was to call this guy? I'm getting my hopes crushed.
If I'm not mistaken, it was John's idea. John got in touch with him. And John got away. He left us with the bad news of DC telling us we're going to lose.
Right, so this is my idea. After the game, we want to have another podcast, and we'll be very happy to have you again to discuss what happened in the game. It will be a good chance for you to encourage us after our defeat.
Hopefully.
If everything goes according to plan, that's my invitation to you, and I hope we can make it.
Yeah, welcome. I would like to do that as well. Thank
you.
Right.
So, finally, a prediction for Saturday?
2-1 Nigeria.
Oof. Goal scored?
Yes.
Oh,
2-1 for Nigeria.
2-1 for Nigeria. And who scores for Nigeria?
I agree. We score one, and maybe Tai Taiwo.
Okay.
Oh, he plays with Heinze. Is he as good as Heinze?
That's why I want him to score.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, thank you very much, BC. And it's been a real pleasure for us. I think having this interview with you is a great value for our Mundo listeners. And I'm sure everyone has appreciated that your insight and your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, VC. And even if it wasn't exactly what we wanted to hear and it wasn't so encouraging, it was still fun to have you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you for having me.
Right, so we still have some good things coming up for Mundo. We've been working in the background, and we hope to see our work see the light very soon, but I can't tell you anything about that at the moment. But what if we discuss what we have in mind for the World Cup? As you could see in the friendlies against Germany and IT, we found this tool called Covered It Live, and it's a very nice interactive chat that was very successful for us, and many, many people joined us for conversation during those games. But seeing as these games are going to be much more important than those two friendlies, I don't think either us or you are going to be willing to be typing and reading what's going on in your screen while Argentina are playing in your TV. So this is the idea that we have for Argentina games in this World Cup. We're going to have the coverage live, but is going to end before the Argentina match starts. Maybe we could probably discuss the confirmed lineup and our feelings before the game. We could start it 1 hour before the game. That's still to be decided, but we wanted to let you know that we won't have the covered live window working during the games because it's probably going to be too much for us and also for you to be paying attention to two screens and we all want to leave the World Cup games differently and not just type in some keys. And also another tool that we another thing that we think this tool was useful for was to provide you with links to watch the game online, but this won't be necessary right now because it doesn't matter where you are in the world, chances are this game is going to be broadcast and if it's not, you're going to be able to watch it somewhere without needing us to provide you with links. Is that right, Roy?
Yeah, exactly. You guys want to live the World Cup experience. We want to live the World Cup experience. And, you know, chances are not many people want to watch the game, like Silva mentioned, watch the game and comment during the chat at the same time. I know several of us, including some people on the blog, who, for the Nigeria match anyways, are invited, you know, to barbecues and family get-togethers. And they won't be around. Not only that, I mean, time difference as well. Some matches are probably going to be played at, you know, 1 in the morning, and God knows where. And for me, it's at, I know the South Korea match, it's at 7 or 7.30 in the morning, and I'm barely able to stand up, let alone, you know, take care of a chat and make sure everything gets published. So
you'll probably stay awake the whole night.
Yeah, exactly. Chances are I'm not going to bed that night, because if I go to bed, it's going to be really difficult to wake up at 7. That's what I used to do for the Beijing Olympic Games. Some matches are at 4 a.m. I wouldn't even sleep. I'd just stay up and watch the games and then go to bed at 6, 7 a.m. But
yeah, or Korea and Japan as well.
Well, no, luckily Korea, Japan, I was not in Canada. The matches were at 10 a.m., 10, 11 a.m., so that was okay, but I'd rather not mention that World Cup. But,
oh, so you were in Lebanon?
Yeah.
And that's why we lost, right?
Well, see, here's the thing. 2002, I was in Lebanon, Brazil won the World Cup. 2005, I was in Lebanon, Brazil won the Confederations Cup. 2009, I was in Lebanon, Brazil won the Confederations Cup. This time, staying put, right. I'm staying in Canada. Hopefully it changes.
No. I'm burning your passport, mate.
Okay.
So you can never leave again.
There you go. But, this time I'm going to stay in Canada. So, that's pretty much how it goes. Nothing is confirmed so far in terms of having the chat 1 hour prior to the match. But that's what we're looking for right now. But in terms of having a chat during the actual match, more than likely, no.
Okay, and now, just because we are so anxious waiting for the World Cup, just let me lighten the mood a little bit. And this is a story that happened. This is a very silly story, but I think it's funny anyway. So I was invited by a friend on Saturday and we were five of us, to play on FIFA, the World Cup edition, on PlayStation 3.
Oh, I have that game.
Yeah. So, this guy just bought himself a new 40-inch high-definition screen.
Okay.
So we were like kids again. I mean, it was so funny. But he was a problem. We were five, and we were all playing together for Argentina, of course.
Okay.
But the problem is, three of them were Boca Juniors fans. Then this other guy was a River Plate fan, and then there was me, a Racing Club fan. So what happened was, they decided on their majority. So they get to decide on formations, tactics, you name it. So they say, okay, the only thing we want and we need to win it is to have Palermo as a starter.
Oh, my God.
You got to be kidding me. So that's what they did. They played Palermo up front, and they said, okay, we're going to let you play Diego Milito as our second striker, just because we want to show you how useless he is. And it gets worse. We drew our game against Nigeria. It was 0-0. And then we were losing to South Korea, and Palermo scored twice in 2 minutes.
Oh my God.
And I was the one scoring with a header. I was managing Palermo. I mean, I was that, that player at the time.
Oh.
And then, not happy with that, he scored twice again against Greece, and he qualified us for the eight finals. And then we lost to France. And I hope this is not how the future looks. But I thought it was a funny story to share with you.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if you noticed, but Lionel Messi in that game is useless. I mean, he can't get a hold on the ball. I mean,
are you serious?
The minute they touch him, he lose controls, he lose possession, and then Palermo is a beast. I mean,
I'm actually very good with Messi in the game. I don't know. Maybe it's because I constantly play video games, but. No, Messi's pretty good. He's one of the best players in the game. He's not bad. He has a good shot. It's difficult when you have, because sometimes, especially if you play online, you have like 2-3 players always marking him. Then, yeah, he's absolutely useless.
No, but the thing was this. He couldn't keep possession. I mean, the minute they touch him with a shoulder or stuff, he would be dispossessed. And I was furious about that, because Palermo would get the ball and be the opposite. He could take on 3 or 4 defenders and continue going strong. And he was a beast. I mean, he was scoring. He scored 4 goals in 2 games. I mean, he was. I was so sad. I was furious.
Wow.
And these 3 guys were all having such a good time. I was happy for them, but I was gutted at the same time. And I hope that's not how the future looks.
No, hopefully it's the complete opposite. Hopefully Milito doesn't score. Hopefully Palermo doesn't score. It's all the rest of our strikers make it past our group. We get past the first round, quarters, semis, and win the final.
Yeah, because if we are to see Palermo, then it's not a good omen, because if we see Palermo, it will mean that we are really, really struggling.
Yeah.
Diego is desperate enough to send him onto the pitch. Yeah. Or it could be the other way around, and we could be winning 5-0, and he wants to give Palermo his debut. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind it either. That would be a perfect opportunity to bring Palermo in.
Exactly.
But speaking of our strikers, you know, from everything, I'm reading your posts on Mundo, and I'm visiting websites, Argentinian media websites. And I'm hearing, you know, obviously I hear about Tevez, Messi, Higuain, Palermo, and even Diego Milito. I'm not hearing anything about Agüero at all. I mean, I'm starting to get the feeling he's really the last guy in the pecking order, like, even behind Milito.
Yeah, and also, when you have, like, 24 hours coverage, you get to hear a lot of stuff. I mean, and they're really opposite to one another. I mean, I remember hearing that some guy saying Milito will be a starter, and then another guy saying he will play with the 4 central defenders he played against Germany from the start. That's Otamendi, De Micheli, Samuel, and Heinze. And I kept hearing, no, Tevez won't start, and then they said, yeah, Tevez will start. So I guess most of the things that are coming to us from the media are just plain talking. I mean, they don't have a clue, because they actually, frankly, they're not watching the training sessions, because they're not allowed to. So it's all speculation, and they say, no, there's no way Milito will be left on the bench, because he's the most on form striker in our squad right now. And I also hear that Palermo is on the same level with Milito, which is laughable. But that's what you hear. I mean, they're trying to make up for 24 hours of coverage, and they don't have enough material or enough truth to work with.
But even at that, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm not hearing absolutely anything about Agüero. I mean, period. I barely heard his name in the past week. I don't know if he really did something to take Diego off, or it's just, you know, like you said, it's just pure speculation. For all we know, he might start against Nigeria, but I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah. No, exactly. It looks like Agüero is being considered as the sixth striker right now, or forward. And I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, we've seen enough times that Diego is happy to play Kun. And he played for Canada, against Canada, the first time he touched the ball, he sent it in. I mean, we shouldn't rule him out. And then he brings you, I mean, if something happens to Tevez, knock on wood, or even Messi, I mean, he should be the one playing that role. I mean, replacing them, because he's kind of a similar player to those two. And you couldn't say the same. I see it like Tevez, Agüero, and Messi are similar in a way.
Yeah.
Or talking about the things they provide to the team. And then Higuain, Milito, and Palermo will be the other type of striker, like big target man, the proper striker, goleador kind of player, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I think Kun could replace Tevez and Messi at any time. And then Palermo...
Palermo.
I know. I hope Palermo is the sixth man in the pecking order. Yeah. I really do.
Okay, and that's about it for us today. Hopefully we put out enough material out for you guys to keep you entertained, at least until the opening kickoff on Friday or Saturday if you live in Australia, like Ziv always says. But yeah, that's about it. Hopefully for the next podcast we could be discussing an Argentina victory, and we'll have John with us. Seba hopefully will feel a lot better. And that's about it from now. Seba, you want to say anything?
Yeah, well, as always, a big thank you to everyone for being there, for making Mundo what it is. And apologize for not being able to give you more podcasts in the past few weeks. It's been crazy for most of us, and it's been really impossible. If it was possible, we would have done a couple more editions of this podcast that we love to do for you. So that said, we are of course planning on making or on doing more podcast editions during the World Cup. We will have a lot to talk about, and we can't wait for the ball to start rolling in South Africa, and for Argentina to show us what they could do. So thanks again. Next time we hope to have John with us, and special guest as well. So thank you for listening, and vamos Argentina.